not, this is your first time here with us, this year our theme at East Orange is fulfilling my purpose, trying to figure out what God wants me to do. And this quarter, we've been talking about fulfilling my purpose in my home. So this morning, I want to begin with a series of questions that I want you to answer to yourself about, in your home, whose responsibility is this? All right? So in your home, whose responsibility is it to mow the lawn? Well, at my house when I was a kid, part of the yard was my responsibility. The other part was my father's responsibility. It got taken care of. In your home, whose responsibility is it to do the laundry? Maybe the wife does it. Maybe the husband does it. Maybe the kids do their own laundry. But somebody is doing it, and it is their responsibility. In your home, whose responsibility is it to pay the bills? I'm not talking about bringing home the money to pay the bills. I'm talking about the actual sending in the check, the filling it out online. Who actually is responsible for that in your home? Also, whose responsibility is it to make sure that there's food in the house? Maybe you go once a week. Maybe you go once every 2 weeks. But somebody, it's their responsibility to bring the food home. Do you know who that is in your house? Or whose responsibility is it to take the kids to school? We didn't have a bus where I went to school, so somebody had to get us there, and I lived 6 miles away, so you couldn't walk. Somebody has to get there. In your house, who takes them? Or who gets their lunch ready for them? Their kids, they're maybe in kindergarten, first grade, they're not making their own lunch. Who's doing that? Oh, yeah. And then we got to make sure we pick the kids up. Because if we leave the kids at school, that ain't going to be no good for them. Whose responsibility is that house? And we've got all these daily things that we go through that we cover our bases on. But whose responsibility is it in your house to help the kids with their Bible lesson? Yeah. That's not as serious to us, is it? I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest with you right here. The complaint that I hear from the teachers downstairs the most, there are two. The kids aren't here often, and the kids aren't prepared. And we've looked at this verse a billion times this quarter, in Proverbs chapter 2, 22 and verse 6, where it says, train up a child in the way it should go. And when he is old, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. I ask you the question, whose responsibility is that? Is that the church's responsibility to train up a child in the way he should go? It's not, is it? It's the parents' responsibility. So why is it that you go to CNN this week, or you open, like I did, the CNN app, and you find this article that was released of millennials are leaving the church in droves? And the article is very interesting. It compares the numbers from the last time in 2007, and then this year, I guess the numbers are probably 2014. But they released it this week, and it was by Pew Research is who did it. And maybe some of you saw it. And their answer was not why people are leaving. There was just finding fact that people are leaving the church. Now, they're using the church as all religions are equal. So basically, if you call yourself a Christian, then that's the church, okay? So that's where we're coming from. And I want you to think about that. So I found it very interesting as to what it was. So in 2007, 78.4% of the people surveyed would call themselves a Christian. And in 2007, 16% would say they don't have any religious affiliation at all. All right? That'd be about where you expect it. In 2014, the number that called themselves Christians went down, which was expected. But it went down nearly 8%, which is what caught everyone off guard. That there were that many people who were walking away, while those who are non, say they don't have any religious affiliation now is up 6%+. That should be shocking. But I'll tell you the thing that was the most shocking to me. They broke it down by generation. They used two generations who called themselves Christians. So you've got the silent generation. The generation that was born from 1928 to 1945. We've got several of you in here from that, right? Out of those people surveyed, out of those 35,000, 85% called themselves Christians. Of the silent generation, the kids that are freshmen in college through just graduating college in 1990 to 1996, 56% called themselves Christians. I'm not done with my shocking stats yet. The most shocking stat out of all of that is nearly 8 out of 10 of those grew up in a religious home. Ain't that a problem? What went wrong? Who's responsible for this? This is a huge falling away. I would suggest to you the parents are responsible, and the children, as they get older, they become responsible. So I ask the question, does that remind you of anything like you read in the Bible? Where the parents, they were Christians, and they served the Lord. And then their kids, not so much. And then their kids, even less. Reminds us of Judges chapter 2 and chapter 3. A generation that did not know the Lord. This morning we're going to focus on four things that that generation did not know about the Lord. And I would suggest it's four things that our generation does not know about the Lord as well. And we're going to see who is responsible for knowing this about the Lord. So open up with me, if you will, to Judges chapter 2. In Judges chapter 2, I want to remind ourselves of our history, of where we are at. The children of Israel were enslaved in Egypt, right? And then they were brought out by God, and they lived in the wilderness for a time because the people, because of their lack of faith, they did not get to take the land. The land that God had said He would give to them, they doubted, and so they didn't go in. That generation is dead. The young ones who were 20 years and younger, they got to take the land. And so as we get to Judges chapter 2, we see that they had taken the land as their inheritance, verse 6. Each had his inheritance. And everyone in that generation, verse 7, they served the Lord. All the days of Joshua, who was the leader who brought them into the land, and all the elders who outlived Joshua, and all who had seen the great work that the Lord had done for Israel, they saw Him take the nations out with the hornet, with the walls of Jericho, with everything. They saw it, and they served the Lord. But they had a hiccup too, didn't they? Even in the days of Joshua, if you went back to Joshua chapter 24, they had idols in their camp. And Joshua was like, you got to get rid of those things. You have to choose today who you're going to serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And all the children piped up and they said, yeah, we will serve the Lord. And so they made a statue that was a witness that they said they would serve the Lord. And they did. But their kids came along. And they had seen it, but they died. That's what happens with all generations. They die. Our silent generation is dying off. And our millennials and our baby boomers and our Generation X's and our Generation Y's, we're coming in. They die off. And what were they, verse 8? or verse 10. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord and the work that He had done for Israel. That new generation rose up. Their kids grew up with their parents serving the Lord, and they didn't know the Lord. And they didn't know what the Lord had done for them, for their family. They didn't know it. And you say, well, how is that even possible?
Good question. How is that possible?
And so what you would see, pick up in verse 11, and let's see how bad it got as this history goes. Verse 11, the people did evil in the sight of the Lord. And they served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them. And they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. And they abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And He gave them over to plunderers who plundered them. And He sold them into the hand of the surrounding enemies so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. So wherever they marched, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm. As the Lord had warned, and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. We got a people who are miserable because the one who was fighting for them is now fighting against them. Why? Because they served the Baals and the Asherah. They went after the gods of the nations around them. And notice the terrible language of what it says they did. They didn't just serve them. They abandoned the Lord. The Lord who did what? The Lord who had given them all of this stuff. The Lord who had brought their ancestors out. They just left Him. And that's why God called it adultery. Because His spouse left Him. And it hurts. And so His anger is brought up. And because when God's anger is against you, things will get bad. So their stuff was taken. Their people were taken. All because they left the Lord. But you know the saddest part about that little story is to me? It's not only that they had left. It was that God, as you would see in verse 15, He had warned them, "This is what I will do. You don't serve them." So when did God warn them about that? I want you to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. This is not the only warning of this. This is just one of the most obvious warnings. That exactly what has happened to this generation is exactly what God said would happen to a generation that did this. I want you to see in verse 1, this is given before they ever take the land. So guess who got this message originally? Their parents got it. And notice who it was for in verse 2. "The message that I'm giving you is that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's sons." This is for all generations. For all of you. You, your children, and your grandchildren, and so on and so forth. Well, what is it that they needed to know? Verse 3. "Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may be well with you, and you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. You be careful to obey my command." And I know I'm going to emphasize careful. Full of care. It's important to do that. So what did he tell in verse 4? Here's what you need to know, Israel. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. There is no other. He is one. And we might say He's number one. There's nothing else. So what should you do? Love the Lord with all your heart, with all your might, with all your strength and all your soul, all those things. That's you. That's the decision that you have to make, to carefully follow it and to love it. And we know that Jesus quoted this in the New Testament, didn't he? When he was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Love the Lord with all your heart, your soul, your strength. That's just as important. But I want you to notice verse 6. And these words that I command you today, that are for you, your sons, and your sons' sons, shall be where? On your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. Not you should haphazardly or sometimes reference them. You teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. When you are going through your daily activities of life, you should be talking about the Lord. I want you to find in verse 8, there's a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. This is your house. Your house is filled with reminders of who is our Lord and who is our all. Because we talk about Him. We do what He says. We think about Him. And we learn what He wants us to do. That's what our house is supposed to be. Well, does that describe your house? Your home? I'll be honest, man. It's hard to do that all the time, isn't it? I live by myself, so maybe it's a little easier. But I have three TVs. I like to watch sports. I like to keep up with current events. Is it really my all? My dinner table, guess who I'm talking to? Myself. I ain't got nobody to talk to it about. Well, you got your kids. They're there. I'm hoping you're sitting down and you're having dinner with them. I'm hoping that you're reading to them as they go to bed at night. What are you reading to them when they go to bed at night? Ever thought to break out a story from the Bible and read to them? About this great story of how Daniel was thrown into the lion's den and how God saved him, or how Nebuchadnezzar tried to kill Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but God saved him, or how Jesus, as a young boy, he got lost, but his parents found him. There are all kinds of stories in the Bible. And I'm not saying don't read your kids' books. Kids' books are great. Guess what? How big an emphasis is it that they know about the Lord and what the Lord has done? It's got to be all. So, the warning to them. This is what you're supposed to do. Love me, keep my commandments diligently, teach them to your kids. But notice here in Deuteronomy 6, verse 10, you get into the land, the Lord is going to give it to you. And He's going to give you, at the end of verse 10, these great cities and these good cities that you didn't build. And houses full of all good things that you didn't fill. And cisterns that you did not dig, wells you didn't dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. You're getting all this stuff that you didn't do anything for. Be careful. didn't know who gave them all of that stuff. And doesn't that happen sometimes with our kids? They grow up every Sunday, they come to Bible class. Every Wednesday they come to Bible class, and they've been sitting on a pew from the time that they were a baby till whenever. And they never had to figure it out for themselves, per se. We've always been religious people. My family are Christians. That's just what we do. And so they get older in life, and they've not been taught to know the Lord. They've been taught to come to church. And when church is no longer doing it for them, what do? They walk out the door. Because it was never about the Lord. It was about church. It's about the Lord. You take care lest you forget who brought you out. And in the Christian's case, what has the Lord brought us out of? The slavery of sin. The thing which will end up in death. And until that raises a personal thing to me, that if it wasn't God who saved me, I would be dead. I'm on, I'm going to be a knot on a pew. Because it's not personal. Because I don't know the Lord. That ain't the way it's supposed to be. Know the Lord. But I want you to notice at the end of the chapter, here's the warning that our world does not want to think about. Verse 15 says, I want you to read verse 14 with me. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are around you. Why? For the Lord your God in your midst is a jealous God. Lest the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you, and he destroy you from off the face of the earth. How serious is God about this? He will kill you for it. What did we have read from Hosea? My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. They didn't know me. And that's going to be consistent all throughout. And so they're taken into captivity because they didn't know the Lord. And God said, that's what I will do to you. And God says to me, that's what I will do to you. So we get back to Judges chapter 2. They didn't know the Lord. And here are the four things that they didn't know about the Lord that we need to know. They didn't know that the Lord was jealous. We understand what it means when our spouse or when our girlfriend or our boyfriend gets jealous. They're not happy with us. And they may try to get back at us. And life is going to be a lot harder because they want you or me to themselves. And in God's case, did He deserve to have us to Himself? He made us His bride, as we would see in the New Testament. That the church, we are engaged to Him. We're betrothed to Him to be married for all eternity. We belong to Him. He bought us with the price of His Son. And when we go after anyone else, or anything else, He's jealous. And He will pay back. I'll tell you the second thing they didn't know about the Lord. They got all that good stuff, all those houses, all those cities, and they didn't realize that it was given to them by God. They didn't realize He was a giving God. They're just seeing Him right now as a God who's causing a lot of pain to them. He's a giving God. He's a jealous God. Our world wants to talk about how God is so full of grace. And everything is all about favor with Him. And that is true. But if we don't follow, the jealousy comes in. And in Judges chapter 2, two things we've not talked about. And I will bring them up very quickly. is at the end of the chapter, of chapter 2, we hear about the people. They are, in verse 18, they groaned. That's the kind of distress that they're in. They were groaning. They were miserable because they had forsaken the Lord. And the Lord, in verse 16, raised up judges who saved them. Verse 17, yet they did not listen to their judges. For they whored after the other gods, and they bowed down to them, and they soon turned away. What they did not know is that the Lord was merciful. Why did He have to send in those judges? They had left Him. Why did He send them to save them? Because He wanted His wife back. He wanted them to be with Him. And so I'll send the judges to them. They'll save them and they'll come back to me. They'll listen to them. But the people didn't want it. And so we would find in the period of the judges that they would do okay for a little while. But notice what it said after the judge died, verse 19. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and they were more corrupt than their fathers. They got worse. Things didn't get better as time went on. It got worse. So this is what the corrupt generation was left with. They had all these nations that were still around them that were not driven out by their fathers. And the Lord left them for that. And of course, He's angry. Again in verse 20 and verse 6 of chapter 3. And this is what it says. I'll no longer drive them out. And God gives us a reason why He said, I'll no longer drive them out. Look in verse 21. I'll no longer drive out those enemies of the nations that Joshua left when he died. Verse 22. Why? In order to test them, whether they will take care to walk in the way of the Lord as their fathers did or not. Our God is a testing God. He wants to know, do you love me? And He will leave circumstances in our life that will show if we love Him. We need to understand that. God tests us day in and day out to see if we believe that He is one. And that we love Him with all our heart. And we are careful to follow. And we diligently teach our children day in and day out that He's there. My pastor, or my faith, they failed clearly. So in your house, whose responsibility is it to know that God is jealous? He's giving and He's merciful, but He wants to know if you're really for Him or not. It's both of your jobs. So parents, here's what I'm going to say. You've got to know it yourself. You've got to be careful to live it. And you've got to teach it diligently. Period. End of story. Children, you've got to learn it. Some of you are old enough that you can pick up your Bible and you can read on your own. You want to do that? You got to learn it. You got to know it. And as you learn it, and as you get older, you got to live it carefully. And guess what you're going to do as you get older, and if you have children, what are you going to do? You're going to teach it diligently. Until the world starts doing that, we'll only become more and more corrupt. I think we've got some work to do. I know I've got work to do.
serious it is that we teach our children the truth about the Lord. We'll talk more about that as we get into recreation, we get into work and all of that stuff. It's important stuff. This morning has not been about how to become a Christian or how to parent, because I'm not a parent. I don't know anything about it. But I think you know whether or not you're doing this. Let's work at it. Let's do what we